So yes, here we are, the last of four Sundays. And I realize that as we gather like this, if we're going to be real honest with each other, we all come with stuff, right? Is that a good word for it? We just come with stuff. You can nod a little bit if you want, wink at me, whatever you want, you know. Things that weigh us down, things that we're concerned about, decisions we have to make, things that aren't working right in life. They can be all sorts of categories. They might be health things, relational things, occupational things, finance. I mean, I can just kind of go on and on with all that family stuff. And as we bring all of that here, my guess is that you come hoping that you're going to hear something that relates to it, that somehow we'll be able to bring all our stuff and find in the person of Jesus something that helps us walk through it. Am I right? Again, you don't have to go a big nod like that, but kind of just a little, So to begin with, I'd like you to just kind of think, you know, bring that to the front. I realize, okay, that's not why I came here to think about it, but kind of bring it to the front and let go of it. Just for a while, just for these next few minutes, kind of take a deep breath. And just kind of let go of it for a few minutes. And let our Lord speak into your heart again. From His Word, not mine, His Word. And give us some perspective on how to address some of this. We've been going through the first part of Psalm 37, because the first part really sets up the whole thing and the rest of it's commentary that backs up onto it. But as we've done this, one of the important values of this is that it's written by David and it's written at the end of his life. Remember that? You know, for those of you who haven't been with us, this is kind of the pickup on it. For everybody else, I'm trying to bring it back to mind. It's written at the end of his life. This is after all the stuff has happened in his life. He's an old man now. In fact, he says so in the psalm. Perhaps this is the last psalm he ever wrote. It's one in which he collects it together and it's going to be his masterpiece. This is the one where he is moving forward and saying, this is what I've learned. This is my takeaway. This is what I give to you as a piece of heritage that will shape your life. Take these keys, he's saying, keys to life, and run with them. We've talked all sorts of things about the psalm here. It's not only at the end of his life, it's an acrostic psalm. In other words, each line of it begins with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It's been referred to as David's take on the Beatitudes. It's a psalm that falls in another category as well. I had this one this week, that all of the Psalms fall into one of three categories. One category is Psalms of orientation. In other words, they give us a way of just understanding life, how God created things and how God's Word works into things and God is King and all this. Orientation Psalms. Another set of the Psalms, another category is Psalms of disorientation. In other words, life doesn't work the way we thought. You know, what's going on here? What's, you know, God, where are you? All those kind of psalms that just simply articulate the angst of life as we walk through it. And then there's a third category, psalms of reorientation. Psalms that give us an understanding of how to live in a broken, fallen world. This psalm is one of those that helps us understand how to move through life in a world that often doesn't make sense. Now, as David writes this, he's writing as one who has trusted in the God of his redemption. He has placed his faith there. He is one that anticipated the coming of Yeshua HaMashiach, the Jesus the Messiah. And that's where he was placing his faith, the same place that we do, and counting on God and placing his faith there for his salvation, the same way that you and I have. But as he walked through life, he discovered a discrepancy, the same one that you and I encounter. That often things don't seem or don't appear the way they should. That somehow often bad people seem to win. and the world seems to be upside down, and there's a lot of unfairness in life, and there's times when God doesn't seem to take an active role in things. God, where are you? That kind of stuff. And that's how he starts this out. He says, do not fret because of evildoers. Do not be envious toward wrongdoers. Just an acknowledgement. These people are there, and this is a big issue for the Jewish mindset, that somehow if God is king, these things shouldn't happen. That if I place my faith in my Redeemer God, bad people shouldn't win, and that I should be blessed. And so David's addressing these things, that this is a reality in a broken, fallen world. Let me tell you about this friend of mine, new friend. Throughout this past summer, I've met a lot of people, but this guy is the winner as far as the one that I enjoy the most. Fascinating guy. He's huge, for one thing. He's a big black man. And we were having dinner together, and this guy, everybody knows he's in the room. Partly because he's so big, but partly because when he laughs, the whole room shakes. And he loves to laugh. We're sitting back there, and I'd ask him questions, and he would just sit back and just throw his head back and laugh, this kind of thing, And I'd look around, everybody's watching us, because he commands that. Well, here's the thing about him. This guy, for most of his adult life, was an FBI agent. Now, that automatically means we're going to have great conversation, right? He's got stories that are endless stories. And he was willing to tell them. I said, you sure you're supposed to be telling me this stuff, Oh, yeah, no problem. And laugh about it and stuff like this. And yet he was, he did all this. In fact, he was a trainer of FBI agents for the last years of his career there. Now, he's a pastor. Now, there's a leap, right? Now he's a pastor of a fairly small church in the inner city of Washington, D.C. Now, add all those pieces together, okay, and you've got quite a story to tell. He'll have elected officials, senators, and so on, show up in his church. But he also deals with a lot of broken mess of life. And so that obviously created all sorts of fun conversation, which continues to this day. I can almost hear him laughing whenever we have email, things going back and forth. But one of the things I asked him was, so how has that experience in FBI shaped you as a pastor? He said, oh, man. At first he laughed, oh, man. and he started to name them all. But here's just one. Yeah, I could go on and on. This guy could kind of occupy our time. So one thing that has shaped my understanding as a pastor is something that every FBI agent, if they're honest, will tell you. Every single one of them. Oh, ears perked up. Said every FBI agent is convinced that evil is real and that their flak jacket cannot protect them from it. Isn't that a fascinating statement? Because I realize as I minister to people that evil is real. That it's not just an idea. We're not all good people who happen to make mistakes. And all this. No, it's real. And the enemy is alive and working. This is that shapes how I go about ministering to people. Isn't that a fascinating thing? And I thought of it in connection with this, because David starts out with that, saying it's real. It happens. You experience it. I experience it. And somehow it plays into our understanding of life and sometimes takes the life out of it. And David says, do not fret because of these people. Do not be envious of these people. So their story is going to end. It's a passing thing. There's a bigger thing going on here. And then he gives us four keys to life. Now, we have been going through these four, and if you've been with us all, the first three and up to now. I'm hoping you got these. We're going to find out. Okay, so I want you to kind of walk through them with me. There's four of them. Okay, let's do just the key words in it. Okay, I'll tell you, I'll give you the test ahead of time. Okay, so the four are trust, delight, commit, rest. Now, if you can remember four words, you are way ahead of the game, guys. So what are they? Let's all say them together now. Okay, ready? Trust, delight, commit, rest. Okay, I'll ask you afterward. Okay, remember, I'm a professor. I give tests. Okay, so. And all of these things, as David lays them out there, he doesn't say these are four good ideas. So these are four things that everyone has to have down. If you're going to somehow thrive as one who has found redemption in the person of Jesus, you know, in God of our redemption, if you're going to thrive there, these things are essential, he says. And so he writes them that way. He puts them in terms of imperatives that are priorities in life. Trust in the Lord, first one, reminder. Trust is that sense of well-being and security that results from placing confident expectation in God. The idea, as he writes this first one out there, is that we are to govern our lives based on who God is rather than how life appears. That all relationships are built around trust. Am I right? Okay. Every relationship is built around trust. And so he starts there. These are in progressive order here. And he starts and says, if you can't actually trust God, you got nothing. You can believe things about Him, but those have to translate into a relational fabric, which is trust. And it's not just an on-off switch, because he talks about the idea of we need to learn how to cultivate this in the midst of life as it's unfolding for us. How do we actually build this relationship? That's what he says. That's the first one. Trust in the Lord. Second one, delight yourself in the Lord. This one has to do with the idea of finding our ultimate fulfillment in Him. We're all going to delight in different things. We're going to have something that is our ultimate delight, the thing that without which life falls apart for us. And if it's not Jesus, it will be something else. And so He points us there and says, delight yourself in the Lord. Have Him be the one who is your ultimate fulfillment in life. Because everything else you're going to lose, this one you can't lose. And so it moves from trust to delight, which is that deepening joy of who He is. Remember, we talked about that. It's the idea of luxuriating in Him, of savoring who He is, of partying in Him. That's it. Trust in the Lord. Delight yourself in the Lord. And then commit your way to the Lord. That was last week. And remember that's not talking about, okay, now marshal up your strength and make a new commitment to God, which is not a bad thing to do. But that's not what he's talking about. Instead, that word commit here, remember that's the idea of rolling something up onto Him, taking it off of you and rolling it onto Him. One of the things I didn't do last week, I was planning on it, it was one of those good ideas, didn't happen. I was going to get someone to help me out. And have them walk in with a backpack loaded with bricks and sit right there. Okay, just walk in. I was going to wait till everybody was here and have that person just kind of walk in where I wouldn't call attention to them, nothing. But you'd all see them, you know, with this thing just like this. And have them come up here and sit here. And then at the strategic moment, have them come up and roll that thing off. Up here. That's the picture. That's what he's talking about. The weight of life, all that comes with it. Your way is the terminology. Take that and roll it onto Him. And then punctuates it by saying, and entrust Him with it. So it's not a matter of just putting it there while we're here in the service and then, you know, picking it up on your way back out again. But rather, bringing it, you lay it on Him, roll it onto Him, and then entrust Him with it. Let Him have that. And the follow-on to that statement is, and He will do it. He will be the one that brings to the surface what is true about you. I saw a report. What was it? The last couple days here. It's a recurring one. Yeah, I mean, you'll see it every once in a while. It shows up at the beginning of school every year, I think. Report on the effects of backpacks. You seen that one? Okay. No? Okay. Well, this is now a public service. Okay. What they've done, I mean, it's been long enough now, they can get some mileage out of this thing and studies they've done. But they found that our kids who have kind of been part of this generation that wear backpacks to school, that they're now getting older, and what they're finding is they all walk like this. You know, because their spine has been affected by long-term effects of the weight. Now, if you want to carry the image forward, long-term effects of carrying the weight of life stoops you over. Maybe not physically. I mean, you can still kind of manage this thing. But inside, it's like this. It weighs you down. So David says, here's the deal. You trust in Him. You delight in Him. And you roll life onto Him, all the weight of it, and you trust Him with it. And then he comes to the last one. That's where we are today. Rest in the Lord, he says. That's that that thing again where we need to do it as a visual reminder. Take another deep breath. We long for this one. Rest in Him. Now, as the images are kind of picking in your mind here, I mean, there's one that comes to my mind right away. This past summer, we took off for 10 days and went up to Donner Lake, where my brother-in-law has this big, huge place up there, the jet skis and all sorts of fun stuff like that. I don't ever feel like I have to own those things. I just want to know somebody who does so that I can go there and enjoy all their, and they can take care of the house. They maintain the jet skis and they do all that kind of stuff. Again, I just want to go up there and use them. so that's one of my philosophies of life. But anyway, we were up there for 10 days and it was just beautiful, and you know, that idea of laying around and you're away from things and life is good for 10 days. You had those kind of times? I mean, hopefully sometime this summer you did something like that where you got away and you were able to kind of, in your own way, you know, and just kind of, you know, we need that kind of rest. But that's not what he's talking about here. Sorry. This is a different kind of rest. This is a rest that happens in the midst of life as it's going on. It's not a getaway type of rest. In fact, the word he uses here is not the typical word you would use for rest. It's not like, hey, y'all, let's all go somewhere else and take a break. It's a word that literally means stop. It's a word that carries the idea being silent. Don't say a word. It's ceasing all activity. You just quit. So it's not I'm going to just back off. I'm going to slow my roll. I'm all this guy. It's ceasing. In fact, some of the older translations put the word desist in here. Desist in the Lord. Stop. It carries the idea of letting go of things. Of dropping it. Put in context of what he's talking about. Remember, his issue is life sometimes, well, much of life seems unfair. Much of life is kind of has this upside down feel to it, like it's not supposed to be this way. And what he's doing is he's got the fret thing and all that, but he's saying, here, you come to this point, which you can only do if you've trusted and delighted and rolled your life onto Him and entrusted Him with it, you come to this point, and He says, stop. Stop being angry at the world. That fret, all that. Stop being angry at the world, being an angry person. stop being someone who has this ongoing smoldering resentment. Go to Acts chapter 8 and Simon the sorcerer is there, and the apostles come nose to nose with him and they say, I see in you a smoldering resentment waiting to flare up. Stop it. Stop trying to fix everybody. I need to kind of tell yourself that. You know, the person sitting next to you or a couple rows up, where it's not your job to fix them. We kind of remind ourselves of that. That's God's job, not ours. And so David writes this thing, he says, stop, rest. And for me, I can't just shut off the switch, right? I mean, maybe you're better than I am, but if I just take this, the idea of stop, it's not that easy. But he says, rest in the Lord. I have to have some place I can take those things. Some place that makes it possible for me to release them. And if I don't have that place, then I'll either fake it, or I just won't do it at all. I'll just live as an angry person. But he says, rest in the Lord. Desist in the Lord. This is where you take those things. If you trust Him and you delight in Him and you've rolled your life onto Him, now you can play, you know, can land here and stop. One of the sad things that is a commentary on the evangelical church is that often the world around us, not you guys, but I mean, the church as a whole, often the world around us looks at us and just sees a bunch of angry people. If anything, we should be those who have found release from that. Not that we are not ones who feel a sense of justice and not ones who, you know, wanting to right wrongs and all that, but not known as people who are just angry people. But people who have found release from that in the person of Jesus that allows us to operate differently. Remember, he says, you know, stop being angry, but do good. And that's what frees us to that. So he says, you know, stop. Stop being angry at the world. Stop that smoldering resentment. Stop trying to manipulate life and fix people and all that. David wrote in another place, Psalm 4, I think it's 5 and 6. It says, tremble, but do not sin. Meditate in your heart on your bed and be still. Same term. The part of what makes that possible is thinking through what God has done, who He is and what He has done. The fact that there's this larger thing. And it takes those times, you know, when he's talking about, you know, meditate on your bed, it's those times in the morning before you get up and you kind of think through life again. It's those times at the other end of the day where, again, you think through life and you allow yourself to sync up to what's true. And then you move forward with it. I know for me, often, if I do it well, those morning hours and those early evening hours, where I'm just kind of at the end of the day and kind of pulling those pieces together, those are great times for me to sync up. But times that are not good for me are in the middle of the night. You find that to be true? Life always seems horrible in the middle of the night. You have those things, you wake up in the middle of the night and whatever it is that you're kind of processing, whatever issues are in your life and stuff, they seem ultimate at that point. Like every, you know, the worst scenarios come out in that. So I found the idea, okay, don't process life in the middle of the night. Process it in the mornings and in the evenings and at strategic points in the day where you sync up again. One of the spiritual practices I started picking up back here is like 3 years ago, I think, is that my phone triggers 4 times a day as a signal for me to stop what I'm doing and pray. Now, sometimes I do it really well. You know, I actually stop and pray. Other times it's one of those quick jabs, you know, Lord have mercy on me, boom, and I'm on. I'd love to say that I'm far more spiritually, whatever. But it's one of those reminders for me that I need to constantly sync myself up with what is true. What he's talking about here is, you know, stop, leave the results to God. As you've rolled your life onto Him, don't do that and then try and figure out your own answers to it again. If I'm trusting and delighting and rolling my life onto Him, I need to leave it all in His hands and let Him be the one who does this thing. Psalm 112, verse 7. You read through that, and it talks about the one who trusts in the Lord. And you get down to this particular verse here, and it says something like this. Okay, this will be my version of it. You can correct me on it later if you want. But it says that such a person will not fear when bad news comes. In other words, when you look at life and it's not the way it's supposed to be, will not fear when bad news comes. It says, for he has settled in his mind that God will take care of him. Isn't that a cool statement? Now, it's not an open question anymore. I've settled in my mind that God will take care of me. In other words, I trust Him, I delight in Him, I've rolled my life on. And now it's this idea of syncing up again. I've settled in my mind that He will take care of me. Rest, he says in the Lord. And then the next line of that is, rest in the Lord and patiently wait patiently for Him. Now your translation say something like that. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. So the two words, you know, rest and wait. Now rest is good. I like that. That feels good. I can take another breath. It's the wait patiently part. You know? I mean, anybody here like to wait? Okay, you're unique. We don't like to wait, right? No one enjoys the idea of wait. We enjoy delay for bad things. Here they're out there. Okay, we want to hold off back here. But the idea of waiting is something that is just not native to us, not natural to us. We don't like doing it, particularly in light of what David's talking about, to wait through things that seem unfair. That's the tough one. And yet waiting is always a part of life. It's an inescapable part of life. It's an inescapable part of our walk with our Redeemer God. Inescapable. In fact, it's more than inescapable. It's essential to us. Something that is vital to us. You need to get hold of this idea. Let me suggest three ways it's vital. Next time you're kind of looking at life and it's not moving and you're kind of stuck in this thing and life seems unfair, roll back to these. First of all, waiting shapes character. God uses it as a tool. Read into Romans chapter 5 and you go through a sequence there and it's in verses, like 3 or 4 somewhere in there. And it talks about the idea that perseverance, in other words, determined waiting is what that word means. Determined waiting. Perseverance produces character, it says. Proven character. Character that comes to the surface then. It's not somewhere underneath, but actually it has to play itself out. It's one of the ways that God shapes who we are. And apart from waiting, it doesn't happen. If life's sailing along, it doesn't happen. Secondly, waiting demands faith. You read through Hebrews 11, and it's a story of waiting. In fact, it says that most of those people in that whole sequence of names there waited all their life and never saw what they were looking for. They believed it. But it was in the midst of that they trusted, their faith was exercised. Faith requires something like that. If things happen immediately, there's no need for faith. It just happened. But it's in the midst of the waiting that our faith is formed and exercised and developed in that. Waiting shapes character, it demands faith, and it forces prayer. Forces prayer. Now, you know as well as I do that when you're in the midst of something that seems unfair and you're waiting through it, you pray differently, don't you? Be honest, you do. I do. It's in the midst of that that I come before God, and a lot of the Psalms, you know, provide a little bit of a language for me to use in this thing. And I come before God, and basically, like David, you know, would say in a lot of his other Psalms, like, what? What's the deal here? What's going on, God? There's one of my heroes, a guy by the name of P.T. Forsyth. It goes back to the 1920s. Wrote a book on prayer, and one of his driving themes in it is that the circumstances of life, particularly the painful ones, those unfair ones, are actually gifts from God that lead us continually to the feet of Jesus. And he makes a case for it. It's true. I pray more fervently, I pray differently, I pray more honestly in the midst of those times than I do when life is sailing. But it's in the midst of waiting those things happen. That the gap between now and what is to come, this gap space here, is essential for us. It's a part of what God uses to develop us. It's essential for our growth in Christ. So he says, trust in the Lord. Wait patiently for Him. Now remember, it's trust in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. In fact, the word that's used here, that's translated wait patiently, is a word that perhaps is even more accurately translated, wait longingly for Him. Because remember, if you've done the thing of Him becoming your delight, if you've entrusted life to Him, all these kinds of things, then there's a longing that comes with this. I'm waiting to see what He will do. Not waiting to see if He's going to do what I want to do, but what He's going to do. How He is going to play the story out. Any way He wants. It's His thing. Wait longingly for Him. One last thing to put in here. I won't have time to really develop it as much as I want to, but he ends up talking about here, following our lead line in there, do not fret because of him who prospers. It comes back to that whole way because of the one who schemes, all this kind of stuff. But as you come down to it, he ends up talking at the end of verse 9. Says, but those who wait for the Lord will inherit the land. Now, for you and I, this is a big deal because he goes on and he says it five times in the psalm. Same statement. They will inherit the land. Now, for those of us who are not Jewish and we're not living there, in Israel right now, it can seem like this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, obviously, if I trust God, I'm not going to get a plot of land in Israel. Right? I mean, that's like, okay, do I scratch those out? The reason David makes such a deal out of this is because it's the covenants of the Old Testament. When God made the promises, how relationship would work with him. The one to Abraham, the one to Moses, you kind of go through those things. And he almost always ties it to the land as a visible indicator that God is fulfilling his promises. This is where it's going to happen, is what he's saying. This is where I will bless you. This will be the physical turf for it. And what David is saying is God always keeps his promises. No one ever loses out trusting God. And that's the key piece for that. Rest in Him. Wait patiently for Him. No one ever loses that does that. Even though life kind of looks a certain way, there's a bigger story happening here. So as we wrap, David comes to us and says, here's what I've learned. There's a whole lot of stuff. He could write tons of stuff on it. But here's what I've learned. Four key pieces for anyone who has found redemption in the person of Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Four essentials. Trust in the Lord. Delight in Him. Commit your way to Him. Roll it on top of Him. And rest in Him. Those are what bring life together and make sense out of a world that seems upside down. Let's pray.